Please pull up a seat and wind down.
Was your sojourn on Rakenjima a pleasant one?
The Golden Witch has invited you to a tea party.
We hope you choose to attend.
Hello, and welcome to a hidden tea party. My name is Courtney. I am the witch of video games, and these are my very special guests.
Hello.
Hi.
Silence. There's an atmosphere on pod tonight.
You guys know the drill at this point.
I was wondering whether Rome was going to jump straight in with anything, and there was nothing. So anyway.
I think you should introduce yourself. Okay. I'm not about to shut the fuck up for the next 45 minutes.
Okay, you? Cool. My name's Jess. I've nearly forgot. Whoops. My pronouns are they, them. I'm excited to see what Rowan has to say.
Hi, my name's Rowan. My pronouns are they, them, and I'm fucking fuming. one of you messaged the goddamn Tumblr, didn't you? With the fucking receipts for the Loctuma accusations. The fucking... Or on this panel at this... Shut up. Pull up a fucking seat and wind the hell down. Are you joking? This is believable. Okay. So, I received this information in very quick succession with some other information. I think they're analogous to each other. So, for those of you who weren't on the live stream, we discovered halfway through the live stream that the Locked Tomb series, a book series that, against my better judgment, I care about, are, like, apparently directly inspired by Umin Echo. And I kind of lost my shit because that's really believable. Tamsin Moore is like well known for being a homestuck person. So it's like not fucking unlikely that the Locked Tomb is also, not the Locked Tomb, that Umin Echo is also on the list of fiction she's consumed and been influenced by. And also, I will be real with you, reading Harrow the Ninth at the same time as reading Umin Echo, there were a lot of times I was like, wow, these are some interesting correlations and crossover themes, to the point where, like, I've got a list on my notes app of crossover themes that I'd noticed. Wouldn't this be a fucking meme if I, like, published this at any point, but I'm not going to because it would devastate me and everyone around me. Then one of you bastards on the live stream apparently decided to just go say it anyway. And I was like, no, it's not true. There's no receipts. And then you've produced receipts now, haven't you? Oh. So I'm stuck with this knowledge for life.
Yeah.
And you've got to decide what you do with that now. How you take your life in the direction
you
want to take it after this.
Because here's the thing, right? Like, from my time on Umin Echo Twitter, I'm pretty good at, like, receiving information and then forcing myself to forget it. And I had done this. Because I'd just been like, now that's not staying in my head any longer. But the problem is, one of you goddamn idiots reminded me, didn't you? I'm talking to you, listener, right now. This is hate more directly to you. I've now got to live with this knowledge in my head.
Meanwhile, the joy that I experienced upon listening to Tumblr messages and seeing that there were receipts that I had to then show to Rowan was incredible. So thank you from me. And I now get to read Harrow the Ninth, knowing beforehand that the inspiration is there.
And you're going to spend the whole time being like, oh yeah.
Oh my god. Well, instead, listener, you have improved my life immensely. This is one of the best things that's ever happened to me. So, thank you.
So, shortly after
MVP,
I checked Twitter in order to calm myself down. A normal behaviour. Twitter, a very calming place.
Yes.
And received the information that the person who'd originally done that, you know, the non-pizza with left beef meme.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with that meme. Apparently the original poster of that is also the creator of Young Sheldon.
No!
Okay, what I was really hoping you were going to say is also an Umin Echo fan, but this is worse.
This is much this worse. Is
Although, could you imagine if the creator of Young Sheldon was an Umin Echo
two
fan?
Of your favourite things have been sullied back to back, is what
on
you're
this
saying.
Day, yeah. So, yeah. I just come to a nirvana where I'm like, sometimes shit people with dog shit taste, like, hit the jackpot and create your fucking blorbo. And you're like, oh, I love this angry sword lesbian. That's it. That's... Anyway, the lot two is a I will argue I like about to backtrack one of my personal opinions. I do my experience with the lock tomb is that it's not the most magnificently written stuff. It just has extremely compelling characters. And as a consequence, it's completely believable to me that this person learned how to write from Ryo Kishi. Sorry, Tamsin.
Being inspired, right. I'm going to stop you there. Being inspired by something and learning how to write by consuming a piece of media are not the same thing.
That's okay. So funny that you're like, yeah, they went to Ryo Kishi's school of writing.
Yeah.
No. Okay.
Also, we know this isn't true because Tamsin Muir is funny.
True. Yeah.
Because she has not managed that intentionally so far.
However, there is a character who spends most of the book doing comic relief bits by being like hot boobs. So there is that.
Yeah, but she's a lesbian, so it's different.
So what you're saying is, if Battler was a lesbian...
Also, none of the people she's saying that to are related to her, and that does make a lot... That does help a lot.
That does help a lot. Also, she doesn't say it to any of these people, she just thinks it, and we're aware of it, which is...
Yeah.
Because you're allowed to have feelings, and you just don't always have to make them other people's problem. And part of
yes.
the issue with Battler is he kind of makes it other people's problem.
So what you're saying is, if Battler had thought, slice up your cow tits and make me a sandwich, it would have been fine.
It would have been more fine.
It would have been better. It would maybe be the specifically misogynist overtones of that one would take some unpacking still.
Just however.
I'm
aware, so I was aware of the lore that Tamsin Muir started writing by writing Homestuck fanfiction. Like, that's the actual way.
Whomst Among Us?
Among Us.
Among Us.
Among Us. I had a fucking take planned for the beginning of this episode, and I've been completely derailed. I was going to talk about... I started playing, I think it's called Bird Story, which is like the next one in the To the Moon series. I'm about halfway through.
No spoilers, please. Is it good?
I'm really enjoying it. I will say one thing, which isn't really a spoiler. So far, no dialogue.
Interesting.
And I was like... This is really refreshing. I'm already emotionally invested in the characters. I think it's inspired by Umin Echo because it does share a lot of the same themes.
Everything's inspired by Umin Echo.
I mean, Umin Echo, you have to remember, Umin Echo is considered one of the best visual novels of all time.
Wow.
Well, I'll be the judge of that.
I don't know
that.
How to feel about that, actually.
It's certainly one of the visual novels.
It certainly is. I think it's actually several of them because it is very long.
That's true. On most review sites, it has two scores, one for the question arcs and one for the answer arcs.
Yeah.
Because they're technically two different games.
You know, J.R.R. Tolkien originally wanted The Lord of the Rings to be published as a single volume, and some guy at the publishing house was like, we don't make book spines that big. And he had to split it over the three. That's
Ryukishi.
Ryukishi originally pitched his idea for how long Umineko was going to be, and they were like, we don't make computers that can handle games. You're going to have to make it smaller.
We're actually playing Umineko Lite.
God.
Imagine how much bullshit it would have had.
Yeah, Ryukishi initially wanted to do Umineko as a book, and they were like, sorry, we're too busy making Bibles right now to publish this.
We need your readers each to be sent a magnifying glass if we can print all of this in one volume, because the text will be so small you can't read it with the naked eye.
God.
Fucking hell. All right, we did do some reading.
Shall we get into the reading?
Let's start.
Okay, so it's been pointed out to me that I should preface this episode with a trigger warning for themes of suicide. There's a lot of discussion in it. Should have flagged it earlier. My bad. I wasn't thinking about this, but I'm going to do it now. If you don't like, there's going to be discussions of self-harm and suicide throughout. Nothing explicit, but like a lot of themes pertaining to it. So if that's something that would make you uncomfortable, please go listen to another episode. We still love you.
Oh, what chapters were these, by the way?
Chapter 11, Black Cat Scratch Marks, to Chapter 13, The Book of Truth. My favorite musical. Sorry, I'm still on that from last time. Okay, it's the party. Everyone's vibing. They're waiting for Ange to come back. And she does! And it's great. Except she seems a little different. She still, like, looks like a six-year-old, but she's, like, fully, like, in 18-year-old, like, vocab era, where she's, like, really annoyed at everyone and, like, trying to confront Battler. Saying that he's trying to, like, deceive her.
Yeah, she's like, this is an illusion and I'm inviting you. And he's like, sorry, what? He also says, like, he also interestingly says that there is no real truth of 1986 for Anja because she's outside the cat box, which is an interesting one. And I did wonder if, like, at some point we were going to go for like, there is no way you can learn the real truth because you weren't there. There's no evidence, that kind of thing, but we'll see.
Battler and Ava are both trying to, like, persuade Ange that, like, you know, you can't trust what's in the diary, there's no real truth, and then Ange says, no, I've had red truth that the diary has the truth in it.
Interestingly enough, Ava also tells her to disregard whatever's in the diary. Because Ava's at this party as well. She specifically says that everything in it is nonsense. And obviously, it's Battler controlling Ava at this point. So, like, that could be why. But I also wondered, like, is it possible that real Ava wrote a fake version of events in her diary, if it actually does truly exist, so that she could taunt Anja even after her own death?
So we know that's not true because we've had the red truth that the diary contains. The truth.
Well, I did also wonder, have we had that red truth in the human world or the witch world?
I'm gonna give it right now for all worlds. Ava's diary contains the truth of what happened.
Because I did wonder, like, because I was pretty sure that it might have been Hashijo who said it, and so that would have been the human world. And Hashijo says it again in the human world in this, which made me wonder, like, does the red truth when spoken in the human world actually mean anything? In which case that would have been a fun get around for a diary that has events in it that are fake.
I think it's important we establish that the diary does actually have the truth.
Okay.
I wouldn't put it past Umineko to have some, like, tricky thing about, like, stuff said. But, like, if you say, like, for example, Ava isn't in the dining room in the human world, but then she's in the dining room in the meta world, like, that's possible or whatever.
I'm pretty sure during the Erica thing, like, you know, when we were talking about, like, Erica's, like, boyfriend and whether he was cheating on her or not, and she was talking about her dilemma, like, she was like, I can't use the red truth because that doesn't exist in the human world. Like, there is no And so I was wondering if they were going to use that kind of logic. I don't know. I'm just picking at the seams of everything in Umen Echo these days, because I'm like, I want to be really pedantic, because sometimes this novel is very pedantic. just in case I predict something with one of these.
once a red truth is on the table, you know it's time to just like up the bullshit.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, how can I make this not true?
So then Ange transforms into her witch form. Let's go.
Which I love, and we've not seen before this point, which like I was always wondering whether she'd get a witch form. It's cool. I like the outfit. It's kind of dark blue and black and kind of edgy.
Yeah. It's got a little fascinator.
It's got a little fascinator. Her little pink hair bubble thingies turn black like her soul.
Yes.
It's so good.
Which is cute because it means... Because the reason she wears those pink hair bubble thingies is because Battler gave it to her. So she switched them out for black ones. She's no longer wearing the ones that Battler gave her.
Well, I
wonder
that. Whether
she's just
painted them black with nail polish. She's just edgied them. You know, I do wish the dress was a bit longer. I wanted it to be like a kind of ball gown thing, but it like it's asymmetric, which is fun, but it ends above the knee, and yeah, that wasn't it so much for me.
This design is specifically unique to the PlayStation version.
Oh yeah, because Ryukishi ran out of time for Anja in the later episodes, didn't he? Yeah. So of course he didn't give her a cool outfit.
Yeah, he wanted to do sprites for it, but ran out of time.
Right, yeah.
So yeah, this is the only version of the game with a proper witch outfit for her.
I'm glad she got one.
I'm really conflicted about it, I'm afraid. Like, there's some stuff about it that's really fun, and then there's some shit about it that's just such a fucking Umen Echo character. I think the skirt doesn't read very well from a distance, and the like ruffle across the shoulders and the skirt going down, it's just not making very good lines. It's not a very good character design. There's not
enough contrast. This is why I feel like it would do better lines if it was longer.
If the ruffle was straight across and it was sort of like calf length gown that we had a flat bottom, I think there's a lot.
So here's some of the concept art, and interestingly some of them are like sort of more ball gown length.
I like the more ball gowny ones.
There's some of these that are like really sort of just like normal Umen Echo shit. There's a huge ball gown here with loads and loads of ruffles. Interestingly, the first one I think is the biggest departure. Weirdly, it feels the most Japanese of the lot, which is why it feels like such a departure.
Because it's the Ashura Miyas, they're all wearing quite Western stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's one with a little witch hat. We never got the... Oh, that would have been so good. That's my favourite.
The little fascinators are really giving me Maria vibes.
He should have gotten a witch.
All the witches should have been allowed to have a witch. I think does Virgilia have a witch hat?
No one has a traditional, like, wide, flat brim, pointy hat.
Sad.
Some people have hats, but none of them are, you know.
Tragic.
Anywho.
Well, that's Ange's fit critique. Yeah. Then Ava Beatrice also shows up and points out something that we pointed out last time, that everyone got invited to the party except for her.
Yeah.
And she's like, don't worry, I'm going to spice things up by smashing a bottle containing a fragment from the future and, like, summoning a bunch of goats.
Yeah, so, like, essentially this bottle explodes and then some beautiful crystals start raining from the sky, and the art's very nice for that. And then the crystals hit the ground and they turn into giant goat men, because that's how physics works.
Because those are the sprites that we had on hand.
The crystal to goat men conversion. And you're like, at this point I was like, yeah, sure, okay. Whatever.
It is what it is.
Yeah. So they're so the characters explain that they're not minions of any of the witches present. They are in fact a manifestation of the people speculating around the Rokkenjima tragedy.
Each goat is a theory from the future about what happened. And they can apparently only be defeated by being denied. And then they start eating everything.
Yeah. They just start chowing down on the entire game board.
The fucking pavement, the roses, the house, like...
It's explained to us that they are denying Battler's game board because the idea of there not being a tragedy is impossible to them. So that's why it's being eroded away.
So this scene reminds me, spoilers for Stephen King's novel The Langoliers. this reminds me of that book, in which a group of people who are on a plane accidentally go through a wormhole and end up in the past. And the the way that time is conceptualized in this novel is that because they are in the past, nobody else is there at all. It's like the present is like a train that goes along the tracks of time, and once the present is gone, the past is just an empty space where, like, everything's grey and no food tastes of anything and nothing works. And then after a while, very big Pac-Man-style monsters come and eat the world.
I love that.
To get rid of it. Because it's the past now and it doesn't serve any function. And I was just like, I don't know. That just reminded me of the time Pac-Man. But this time it's goats.
That's really interesting. Goats. Did you know that Stephen King's actually inspired by
Umanaki?
And that's why he wrote that. He said in an interview that I only have a Twitter thread from someone who's attended. Don't investigate this person any further. It's not one of my friends. It's just some random who was in the panel, I swear.
That's incredible. Oh, I can't. By the end of this podcast, we will have produced and given evidence for the theory that Umineko has actually inspired all works of film and literature throughout time.
I'm really excited for the Barbie movie inspired by Umineko. Yeah.
Don't fucking take that away from me. Don't do it. I have
Margot Robbie's a really big Umineko fan.
Oh my god.
Okay. Right.
Anyway,
so
yeah.
Positing the blue truth that Margot Robbie is illiterate and therefore cannot have read Umineko. Count with the blue the red truth that Umineko does not have to be read. You can listen to
to be inspired.
You
can listen to Umineko if you know Japanese.
The goats decide to, like, break into the house because they're going to, like, you know, eat everything. Everyone who's not, like, good at combat decides to hide in Kinzo's study upstairs while Dillinor, Will, the Stakes, Ronave, Evagili, etc., like,
God.
Fight off the goats, at least try and, like, stall for time.
I have some things to say about this. So first of all, like, they kind of recycled the cat eye graphic, but they've changed it to, like, red glowing eyes of the goats, and they're actually quite cool and a lot creepier and kind
of, this fucking slaps.
It's quite effective, actually. I quite like that. This was the point where I was like, okay, so the goats are eating the people and the place, and they are theories. Are we saying that the real enemy are true crime podcasters?
Apparently.
You're right. Oh my god, it's really true crime
podcasters. And that they're goats in this reality. I also love, by the way, the goats have exactly two sprites, one of them standing and one of them in kind of a lent forward position, like, it's their, like, attack stance. But it kind of, they have like one arm in front as if raised to do like a backhand across someone's face. And it looks like, I don't think this is the intention, but it kind of looks like one of them backhands Goda across the face at one point during this scene. And I loved it so much.
That's canon now. That's canon. Goda got fucking epically backhanded by a goat.
And he loved it.
So, the plan is to, Kinzo comes up with this plan, that the sudden, like, the game board's fucked, basically, and there's one place that they can go, and that's the Golden Land. So, they have to buy time for them to, open a door to the Golden Land. You know, it takes, apparently takes time to open. And in the meantime, everyone is going to try and fight off the goats as best they can.
Yeah, there's this bit as well where, like they're trying to plan this, and Gap takes Birto and Battler into the air through a portal to show them quite how many goats there are on this island. And it's just, they're swarming it. And they're like, yeah. Oh, shit. And then... and then I like this bit. Gap just drops them back into the study, and Birto is like... if you're going to drop me, at least do it on a bed. And I'm like, Gap Trichet, oh. The ship's been confirmed.
yeah, no, love that.
I know goats are eating the entire reality, but, like, priorities.
Yeah, priorities. Please, comfort. So, we now get the most epic anime fight scene of all time, or at least a big culmination of Umineko's anime fight scenes. So we have, like, the jesters and the snakes trying to battle the goats. But the goats are like, actually, you can't hurt us because we think this is a mystery and you guys don't exist. The snakes are paperweights. The jesters are Maria's rabbit figures. And then Dolinor and Will show up and are like, well, in that case, show us your mystery theories and we'll be the judge of that.
And yes. They take out their Nox and Van Dyne swords and start slashing away. There is a fun bit in this as well where, like, because we've talked when Van Dyne's laws got introduced about how they basically cover cover the important bits of Nox and then just add a lot of fairly arbitrary other shit on top of it.
Yeah.
There is a fun bit where Delaynor can't fight one of the goats. And Will kills it because Van Dyne covers something that Nox doesn't.
Yeah, it's fake murders specifically that Van Dyne says you have to have a corpse to have a crime.
And they do even say on, like, in the game, like, there's plenty of murders. There's plenty of mysteries that don't have murders that are good. And they're like, are our laws outdated? Yeah. Like, and we're all there like, yes. Anyway. Well, what was Nox fifth again? No, let's move on.
The goats decide to fight back by saying it's a waste of time to think about it as a mystery. You don't need to think. Thinking is overrated. And then Battler shows up and is like, well, if thinking is overrated, then you're basically just saying it's a fantasy. And so the stakes and the chiestas can start attacking them again.
So... this bit annoyed me because I get what they were trying to do. I don't think that, I don't really know how they did it, but it wasn't like, but it was like, I don't really know how they did it. Does not really, it's not really the equivalent of a witch did it, but you know, I can see that logic. But like, what really pisses me off about this bit is that both Will and Battler talk have a lot of lines in this section where they're saying like, oh, I really hate people who don't think when they read stuff like this. And like, imagine bragging about reading a book without trying to solve it. Like, what horrible people. And I'm like, I don't think there are actually people out there who like are bragging about the fact they didn't try to solve a mystery. But there are a lot of people there who read a mystery and don't fancy solving it, and that's fine. Like, you're allowed to read. You're allowed, like, if you want to treat a mystery as a puzzle, go for it. Go right ahead if you enjoy that. But you don't fucking have to. It's not morally bad to read a mystery book and not try and solve it.
I think it's less about it being a mystery book and more about the positioning of Umineko and Echo as a game, that the game is between you and the author.
I think
it's in direct response to actual people when the game was coming out saying that they didn't want to engage with the mystery.
Like, I don't know. I think, like, the fact that he keeps slapping us over the head of being like, you have to try to solve this, makes me not want to solve it. because I'm like, let me enjoy media how I want to fucking enjoy it, okay? Like, you don't get to dictate how I get meaning out of this experience. Like, you can want me to solve it, but, like, just tell me that. Don't keep slapping me and telling me I'm a bad person if I don't. Like,
Ryukishi's done this before, where it's like, oh, are you thinking yet? And the issue is, that was supposed to be a contract between us where we thought about the mystery and then he offered an answer, and we kind of felt like he didn't give us an answer, and so it now just feels like really rude to be like, yeah, did you think about the mystery? And it's like, well,
you didn't fulfill your part of the bargain at all. So
I gave myself like 5 hours in an evening on that fucking epitaph, which is more than I've given solving anything ever, so fuck off.
Ounce for the last time. Although, to be fair, he does say at the end, feel free to challenge Beata's game as a mystery or a fantasy, but I'm not going to let you deny this final game of mine. So,
yeah, like, I'm aware that, like, it's a fictional scenario that, like, it's probably not exactly what he's saying, but that's kind of what it feels like he's saying. Which I rub me up the wrong way, I will say.
I think basically he's fighting to protect this version of events where no one dies, basically.
Yeah.
And he's finding it weird that people would come and try and destroy that while, like, having no actual theories on what happened.
Mm.
But that's my take.
Yeah, they're not an exact allegory, but yeah, it was an interesting one. It also reminded me, because Battler pulls his golden sword during this fight, that we still have no idea what a golden truth is or why it's important. And I'm like, oh, so hopefully, anyway, that's going to come up at some point. Soonish, probably. Maybe. I don't know whether that will change things that happened earlier, or I don't know.
Who knows? Ange makes her way to the chapel, which is being left alone by the goats, so that's quite nice of them, and finds the Book of Single Truth, but it is inside, like, a crystal. So it could only be broken by Battler.
Well, she specifically says it can only be broken by a game master.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, so Burncastle can break it.
Yeah.
However... while Battler's trying to stop her from getting it to Burncastle, he gets trapped by a certain someone through a blue barrier.
Erica causing problems again.
Yep, Erica Ferudo, who's challenging him to a mystery.
And Battler's just there kind of trying to pretend they're still kind of friends, even though she's done nothing but cause him issues. and is still doing so. But they do have a duel, which is quite cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, have a little mystery off.
Yeah, where, they both give each other a closed room mystery to solve.
Meanwhile, Beatrice goes off to stop Ange by creating a red barrier around them, where she has to answer a mystery that Beatrice poses to her.
Yeah, so they're all doing their own closed room mysteries. Like...
Yeah, and just like, I guess this is the first time we've, like, directly fought, huh? Which it is. So that's quite nice, you know. A little moment.
I will say, I'm not super pressed about this, because whatever. But, like, they do fling a couple of blue and red truths at each other in these scenes. We don't get enough, like, information about any of the closed rooms to be able to work anything out ourselves. It's very much a kind of, like... They're having a duel, but it's not a puzzle for us to solve, this one. Yeah. And I'm like, it could have been. And that would have been fun. But like,
yeah,
I guess that's not the point right now. And that's kind of fine because we've had enough of other puzzles in this episode that I'm not mad about it.
If this was a gameplay game, these would be like
these would
little
be,
puzzles that we'd
yeah.
get. And that would have been fun. I think if I ever go back over this book, in the back of my mind, I'll be thinking of places where they could have put puzzles to keep me engaged.
Yeah.
Because what I really need is, the serotonin slot machine. But instead, we cut away halfway through the battle. We don't get to see, like, anything, basically.
Yeah, we cut to...
Ryukishi basically writing himself into getting a fucking movie deal. He's like, oh, wouldn't it be great if people loved this so much that they made it into a film? Like, shut up.
Yeah, Hachijo's being courted by this this company, a movie and TV drama, and it's going to be like a fake contest that you're going to enter with this book that
you've
already
written. And
then we'll
make you win it, and then blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Her response to this is to go, no. Because that plot's more in... Because that, like, conceit you've just described is more interesting than the book I've written. Because she specifically wrote a book that was crap. That she wanted to troll her readers into thinking it was good. And then she was going to turn around and been like, actually, you're all idiots because I wrote a shit book on purpose and you loved it. And I was like, she's such a fucking asshole. Also, is this what Ryukishi did? He's here being like,
would be really funny
are like,
if that
when
was
people
it.
Are like, oh, I really liked Umineko, but like, why did you do this thing? He was like, well, actually, I wrote the book to be bad, and the fact that you liked it means you're an idiot. Actually,
kind of iconic, actually.
I think the true idiocy is not doing something genuine and true.
I think the true idiocy is we decided that we were going to read this book.
Speak for yourself. It's like one of my favorite books, but okay.
No, it's not that bad, but that was quite funny though.
I'm fucking out of a job apparently.
Sorry. Yeah.
Main Umineko hater fucking taken over here. I'm gonna have to like try and solve the epitaph or some shit.
Yeah, you solve that now.
I've already forgotten like 60% of the epitaph solution. I reckon if we give it a year and you presented it to me, I would have a good go of trying to solve it.
You'd be like, oh, something about a sweet fish river.
I was like, I know Taiwan is involved and that's all I've got.
Yeah.
Hachijo alludes to the fact that, you know, maybe they could pay her in dried plums to feed to her cat.
So I was like, oh, her cat in the human world is Burncastle, which is quite funny.
Yeah, that is very funny.
In the human world, Burncastle's just a cat.
Please, please write in if any of you are insane enough Umineko lovers to have a cat that you've actually named Burncastle. I would really love to see pictures of Burncastle, actual cat.
It's a good cat name, I think.
If I liked this book, I would be calling my next cat Burncastle. Like, that slaps,
it
actually.
Would be good.
So, Hachijo's done dealing with the company and goes back to writing.
Yes.
And says that she likes to write her tales in ink. Burncastle's like, that's stupid. You have to write out with a keyboard again. And then Hachijo's like, ah, but don't you also have to draw the tail in your mind? And then Burncastle's like, that's really stupid. You just have to write, you wrote it out three times. So.
She's got a point.
Yeah.
got
a point. Yeah. And she is apparently writing the tale of single truth.
Oh, is that what she's doing? Okay, that wasn't clear. I thought, because she says she's trying to write a story of 1986 that would satisfy Anja, and is having problems with it.
The issue she's having, Yeah, is that she can't write anything that will satisfy Anja because Anja only cares about the single truth.
Yeah. So I presume that she was writing something else.
She's trying to write something else, but right, she can't write anything because she's trying to write the truth and can't do it.
In this discussion, Berncastle completely, like, knocks on the head the problem with episode 7. Because Hashijo was talking about how the truth isn't interesting to read. She likes the kind of the mystery of the unknown and stuff. She doesn't want to write a single truth because that's boring. And Berncastle's like, well, you're the one who wanted all of the answers for the game, the previous game boards. And Hashijo points out that like Berncastle did it in a clever way because they gave her the answers in a way so that people who didn't understand wouldn't figure it out. And I'm like, that is the problem. Because you've given answers that are only answers if you already know the answer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if you have to already know the answer to be told the answer, then that's not a good mystery. It's just really elitist. and I'm like, that, I was just like, you're right. That, like, that's exactly what the problem was. And you did that on purpose. Wow. So yeah, good to know it was a choice, I guess. But yeah, it was just seeing that, I was like, yeah, you're right. That was the exact reason I was so annoyed with episode 7 is because you did that.
Because I feel like this is what Courtney's been saying the whole time, is like, once you know the answer to Umineko, as with, you know, any murder mystery, when you, like, if it's decently written, when you know the answer, there's a bunch of things that you go back through and you're like, oh yeah, they've done that because that, like, that's why it's fun to rewatch. Like, it's, I had a really good time rewatching Knives Out recently because
they're fun on a rewatch because you see everything.
Yeah, and you're like, oh fuck, they did that because of that, and like, oh, this is really good and that's so cute. I love that.
But yeah, it goes back to that thing where I'm like, yes, okay, like, if you want to solve the puzzle, do it, and I'm sure you get very satisfying being told you're right. But like, not everyone has the time, the energy, the resources to be able to sit down and work out the answer to this already incredibly long book. And I think you should still be able to enjoy it and get a satisfying answer if that is true for you. Rika, she's like, yeah, if you've been like, I will make a book that is only enjoyable if you've done the puzzle and also done the puzzle well. Because if you've tried and you fail, it still doesn't make sense.
Like, yeah.
Boo. Anyway, we can move on now. I just wanted to...
No, that's fine. It's interesting to get out.
I think unless Berncastle comes up with any more gems like that, I'm done talking about episode 7. But like, yeah.
it was just a really nice, like, micro.
It pointed out exactly what the problem was that I hadn't realized before.
Mm-hmm. So one of the big things that Hashijo is stuck on is how boring the truth is.
Yeah.
It's every tale that she's written is far more interesting than the truth, which I think is interesting to think about.
And I think thought when I read that that just kind of meant that like writing anything fictional is always more interesting than the truth, but like you can interpret that as like literally the truth of 1986 was boring, which is quite interesting, I will give you, because you know most detective stories and mystery stories are massively sensational and wouldn't happen in real life because things in real life just aren't that complicated, so like. I don't know, but that would be quite an interesting turn of the events. And I think Anja also thinks about that later on. She's like, what if the truth is just really boring? So I was like,
"What? Because the truth? Because the like, what if the truth is the bomb malfunction?
Yeah, like what if like, the clock blew up? Died. Ava had gone to visit to look for Kuadori, and everyone else died.
Yeah,
that was it. Like, it could have been, that easy.
Yeah. So we get two kind of big revelations at the end of this. We get a servant come in and says to Hachijo that Toya-sama has woken up.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because we thought that she was Toya.
Mm-hmm.
Is Toya the last name or the first name?
The first name.
Ah, yes. Okay, that is more interesting. Because I was like, does she have like a son or something? Like, does she have a kid? But I'm like, okay, that's she's stealing someone's identity.
We love some identity theft. And also that she has a drawer with the key, the butterfly key inside it.
The one sprite that Ryukishi was bothered to draw for this fucking game is just a picture of himself. That's why there's such a big reveal about Hachijo Toya, who their actual identity is.
What you gonna? Toya-sama's gonna turn off, and it's an anime Ryukishi. Is that what you're saying is gonna happen?
Well, it would be better than him just having used a photo of himself. So, you know.
That would be really funny, though.
No, really
it's got like the fucking like anime schoolgirl body, like, but instead of the goat head, it's
just
Ryukishi's
a photo
face.
Of his face. The other important thing in this is that Hachijo decides that she's not going to bother writing the rest of Anja's story and just let her choose what happens. And Burn's like, yeah. Oh, okay, so she's going to go for the single truth then. Like, that's going to be inevitable now.
Yeah. That glad that tension's been resolved.
Rowan's like, thank God, we're actually maybe going to get the truth.
Yeah, so, also Erica, the, like, will she, won't she dynamic that you'd been establishing for all of this episode, gone.
The will she, won't she dynamic of the past 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, dear. So, Erica and Battler are still fighting out on the game board, and Battler's basically trying to argue as to why she shouldn't learn the truth, that basically it will keep her kind of trapped thinking about what happened in 1986 forever, and that she'll have nothing else basically, while Erica's like, truth is the supreme, the ultimate, and that it's her only way to it's the only thing she needs is the single truth.
Yeah, it's interesting as well that like Battler actually in this conversation claims that if Anja found out the truth, it would be useless for her. And Erica's like, well, of course it wouldn't, because it'll inform the rest of her life and like how she chooses to live in the future. And I'm like, maybe it wouldn't for everybody, but because she's made her entire life revolve around this event and this truth, then yeah, like, knowing the truth, whatever it is going to vastly change like her perception of things going forward. So that's interesting. Like, I think Battler could do with like seeing it from Anja's perspective a little bit more and being like, yeah, actually this would be really important to her, because maybe then he'd have communicated a little bit better.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you're right, because on a sort of an objective level, it probably wouldn't change much. Like, it's not going to change, it's not going to bring them back, it's not going to sort of change how it's impacted Anja's life physically, but it sounds like Anja needs some form of closure, and she's not going to... This is the best way for her to get that.
But then it kind of does then reveal this at this point that it reveals that actually it's not really going to change the rest of her life, because trigger warnings from here on in.
Yeah, we're really going for it now.
Yeah, is that Anja basically says that, like, basically when she, like, in her future in 1998, time actually stopped the moment before she was going to fling herself off that building, and all of this has kind of happened in that moment. And so the moment she learns the truth, the next thing she'll do is go off the building and die. So, like, in that sense, it won't change how she lives her life. Because the only thing she plans to do next is die. And I'm like, yeah, that does recontextualize things a little bit, yes. But then also, Battler, you should really be concentrating on, like, trying to explicitly give her reasons to live. In that case, like, Erica says the most true thing to Battler that she's ever said in the whole game, which is, if Battler had just told Anja that all he wanted was for her to live, she might have listened to him. And I'm like, yeah. Of course, all of this kind of fluffy, vague stuff isn't hitting when she's just like, all I need is the truth, and then that's it.
The argument, I guess, here is, like, no matter what the truth is, they're still gone, and that's...
Yeah, she's decided that without her family, that she's basically convinced herself that she should have died.
Yeah, she's got an enormous case of survivor's guilt, which makes sense, given everything that's happened. And nobody's ever... been nice to her since then. But yeah, I don't know. It was this was sad. Finding out that, like, the motivation is, like, it's just for the truth, because that's the last thing she wants closure on, basically.
Yeah. It's the last thing she's living for is the truth.
Yeah.
I remember when she jumped in the original game, like, really early on, when she jumped, we were like, how the fuck has she survived that? And I guess the answer is she didn't.
Yeah, I think the answer for that is that basically everything past that point was, like, witch truth stuff to help her in finding the truth. Because, yeah, it's on top of the building when she makes the... when she talks to Burncastle. And essentially, yeah, it, like, they also talk about how, like, apparently the contract between Burncastle and Anja was like, explicitly, Burncastle was like, I will give you the truth, and for that, you'll give me your life. Which is a little more explicit than what we actually got when we saw what was happening in episode 4. So it also... recontextualizes, like, Burncastle as much more of the villain in Anja's storyline from the beginning as well.
I really struggle with, like, oh, this person's the villain of Umineko. Well, because the villain of Umineko used to be Beatrice. And that's kind of...
There are a lot of villains in Umineko.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's, like, necessarily bad, as in, like, there's a lot of people who are very cruel.
Yes.
And there's some quite horrible people in Umineko, but I don't think any of them are, like, an antagonist in the traditional, they're working against the hero's goals, because, like, even Burncastle is kind of trying to give Anja what she wants. She's just
it's wrong to say she's the villain of Anja's story, but she's probably the villain of Battler's. Because from his perspective, she's killing his sister. But that is you're right. That is what Anja actually wants. Or at least she cares little enough for her life that she's perfectly happy to give it up for the truth.
And then you get into questions of, like, well, okay, so who has created Burncastle? Is actually all of this Anja's creation, because this is her sort of
desperately reaching for an answer, and therefore actually Burncastle, Beato, all of the magic is just set dressing for Anja trying to sort of resolve the truth.
That's true. There's a lot going on here, basically, is what that boils down to, I think.
Yeah, I'm interested in sort of how this knowledge impacts how we read other parts of Ange's characterization.
Well, Ange manages to break out of Beatrice's barrier by using the blue truth that Beatrice simply locked Ange. The locked room crime was Beatrice locked Ange in a room and then starved her to death, which is technically a murder.
It was quite entertaining, actually, before this. Ange was struggling quite a lot with Beatrice's locked room because she is like the first main character who is not a lover of mystery novels.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
She's the only
person
who actually has been like, actually, I've not done stuff like this before. I don't know how to do this.
Yeah.
But she manages it anyway, so there you go. Also, Battler and Erica beat each other's rooms, and both of their solutions are really stupid also.
Really stupid. Well, the solution to Erica's is that the chain on the closed room door was really long, so you could set and unset it from outside. And the solution to Battler's is that his room had no ceiling,
so you could just climb over the wall. And I was like, actually, quite glad at this point that we didn't have to play those as puzzles if those were the solutions.
I think this could have been really fun if we'd had this great big long visual novel where we've been solving all of these problems with like sometimes slightly convoluted and irritating feeling solutions, and we'd be like, ugh, it's really annoying that we had to figure out that Shannon and Cannon were the same person to figure this one out. Like, ah, it just feels a little bit convoluted. And then right at the end, it being like, haha, aren't we ridiculous? Look, these puzzles have been solved off screen. This one's about a long chain and this one's about no ceiling because we're awful like that, aren't we? Haha, I would have been like, damn, the feeling of camaraderie that this game has earned for me makes me find this joke funny. Yeah. It's like, that's a cute reference to the fact that Uman Echo is fucked up sometimes.
And also the kind of link back to it being like, especially in this episode with Burncastle's game, a purely logic exercise rather than anything to do with, like, especially the ceiling one, with, you know, like, the real world. Like, that's divorced from reality.
Yes.
Ange, Ava Beatrice, and Erica make off with the Book of Single Truth, still encased in crystal, but, you know, they've gone off with it.
They actually leave the game board, don't they?
Yes, they leave the game board. They go off.
They have some kind of crystal that lets them do that, or whatever.
Yeah.
And Erica also has one, and Battler tries to steal it and fails.
So back in the mansion, the first floor has been so thoroughly chewed apart that the goats have eaten even the ground they were standing on and have fallen into nothingness.
Something, snake eating its own tail. Seeking the truth is murder and destroys both you and your hopes and dreams. If you like true crime, remember that.
If there are any MILFs listening who are really into the Jeffrey Dahmer shit, my Twitter's in the description.
I knew you were gonna say something like that.
I feel like there's two types of people who are like super into true crime, and one of those types of people can stay the fuck away from me, and the other kind,
and the others
like,
are MILFs.
Yeah, I just feel like there's a certain kind of like mum who sort of, as her escapism is like, and then they were torn limb from limb. The police have no evidence of who did this brutal murder. And I'm like, oh.
Okay. Horny Rowan Hours. True crime edition.
the truest of crime is Rowan being horny.
It never hits, does it? I need more Riz.
So Leon starts talking about how maybe that they should try and restore Anja's hopes and dreams, and maybe it's possible because they survived. They were saved by Lambda Delta before they were eaten by Kat. And then Lambda Delta shows up and is like, actually, I just think Birdcastle didn't really want to kill you.
But yeah, Leon's basically like, I'm certain that we will save Anja. And everyone else is like, sure.
Lambda Delta basically says that there probably wasn't a literal contract for, like, your life in exchange for the truth. It's just that Burncastle knows that once Ange finds out the truth, she's just gonna die. Mm. Like, she's gonna choose to end her own life because she will have lost her hopes and dreams.
Mm. There's nothing between Leon's ponytail and their neck, which isn't transparent, and it's always white, and it's really obvious in these images because the background is dark brown and there's just this tiny little sliver of white. It was extremely distracting.
I'm glad that you brought that
Thank you for your input, Rowan, to us
as well in this moment. That's beautiful. Do better, PS3 sprite artists. Can't believe you took us out the moment like that.
Yeah, there's like 2 pixels of white between ponytail and neck.
Like, I know they're talking about deep stuff and suicide and things, but like those 2 pixels, man. Oh.
I can't believe this ruined the game.
I kind of clocked out once I knew Anja had decided to do this because I feel the fantasy of like being able to sort of talk somebody down is one that's quite hard because, yes, of course, you should always like give that a good go. But also, I think like the idea that someone can be rescued from these feelings is one that quite often ends up leaving the people bereaved by suicide with like feelings of guilt because it's like, well, you could have done better and you should have done better. And it's like, sometimes someone just decides to do this and you kind of, that there is a certain point in which you can't stop them. And I think when in 2 seconds time they're going to jump, that's, you're probably not, yeah.
It looks pretty bleak for Anja right now, considering that like, all of everyone she's ever cared about is dead. There are no truths of 1986 that I can imagine that would change her worldview enough to stop her from dying in this moment.
Well, there is one. It's literally anyone survived who wasn't Ava would be the one thing that would give her a...
Yeah, because she could go and find them.
My presumption was that that wasn't going to be the case, but yes.
But she basically says, like, she said earlier in this episode that she's had to come to the, like, she's had to conclude that, like, she really does want to learn the truth, because initially she wanted to find out someone survived, and then she wanted to find it for revenge. But now at this point, she just wants the truth for the truth's sake.
Yeah, and there is also, like, I think the way it's set up is that she has given up her idea of wanting someone to survive in favor of the truth. Because she thinks that accepting and learning the truth will be learning that everyone is definitely dead. And I would not be surprised if that was the case. especially considering, like, say, like, because Anja's been, you know, on the news. She's been fairly famous through all of this because of the murders and stuff. If one of the Ashiramirs had survived and just fucking left and knew about all of this was going on and just hadn't been like, hi, Anja, should we meet up? Like, I'm not sure Anja really wants to meet that person. That doesn't sound like a great person. But, you know, who knows?
Okay. I've been thinking about what I was just saying because I feel like it didn't necessarily fully come across the way I was trying to say it. What I think my point is, what Leon is saying at this moment in time just to me comes across as like really twee and misplaced. So it's like they're like, oh, we'll restore her hopes and dreams.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that there's this and that and the other. And I'm like, it just feels so misplaced about the like the level of despair that Anja must be in at that moment in time to choose to do this thing.
I think
it just feels so like, oh, there's a savior complex, fucking Paddington 2 ass. There's always brightness in the
Paddington
world.
Not Paddington 2!
Anja can't see that right now. And it feels so misplaced and like Leon has just absolutely no comprehension of what Anja is feeling.
I think I will give Ryukishi like, this. I think that's intentional.
Yeah.
I also read that and was like, oh, Leon. Like, like that's not a comforting thing to say right now. Like, that's just... yeah, it's max of like, don't be depressed.
Go for a walk.
Yeah.
We'll
fix you.
It's so Disney princess.
It's difficult to tell whether it does come from that or not or whatever. And I'm not sure whether, like, he'll be right. They'll be right. But, yeah, we will see. Everyone in this scene, apart from them, is skeptical.
Yes.
Because they're like, right.
They've kind of given up at this point.
Yeah, and I don't think that's the right approach either for what it is worth. I think, like, yeah, you do not stop fighting until the moment there is absolutely no fighting left to be done. This is not the time to give up on this bitch. Like, come on. But
it's also not the right response to be like, everything will be 100% fine, definitely.
Yeah, you've just got to believe and hold on to your hopes and dreams. And I'm like, yeah, that probably feels quite distant at this moment in time.
Yeah.
Lambda Delta decides to stick around because she's finding this all very entertaining, but she's not actually going to help.
Yeah.
Which is very fun. And we then cut to how do I describe this? Sort of a very, very, very big library.
Very big.
Yes. Like a sea of bookshelves, essentially. Which is where Ange, Erica, Ava, Beatrice, and now Burncastle are like hanging out.
I believe it is literally called the City of Books.
Yes. Yes, it is. That is the official name.
This place slaps.
It's a good place.
I do want to highlight briefly, because I keep coming across this and forgetting, the background music in this moment is one that is repeatedly used. The title of it, at least in English, is S/HE end. So it's like she, he, end. I can't tell whether that's based or not. I'm like, you're like seconds away from saying the phrase he, she, and I don't know that Ryukishi's someone who should be able to say that.
Well, Ryukishi didn't name the track. It's whoever composed it who named it that.
You know what I mean. You know what I mean. I'm just like, oh, okay. And then every time it comes up on the Let's Play, I'm like, oh, there it is again. It slaps. It's a good piece of music. Just like, oh, that's an interesting name. Oh.
Roasted.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, it's
sorry to do transphobia corner again.
It's Zaki who wrote that. So I don't know. They have a very interesting naming scheme for their Umineko tracks. So
it's cool. It slaps a little bit, but
my favorite being Le 4 - October.
Yeah, there's a lot happening.
Yeah,
there's a lot of names of Umineko tracks that slap, but yeah.
So, they're hanging out in the Sea of Books. Burncastle's like thawing out the book from its crystal prison while Erica and Andrew are enjoying some tea.
Mm-hmm.
And Erica says that the thing that separates witches from humans is that when you realize you are the main character in the story you write for yourself. So very big main character energy from Erica right here.
It's also later, like in this same discussion, becoming a witch is kind of defined in this story as a moment where a human cannot live anymore. I believe it is said.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, instead of it being like I have reached the height of my power and therefore I'm going to become a witch. Becoming a witch is kind of, and you can definitely see this with like Beatrice and Anja's storylines. It's a last ditch thing.
Yeah. It's literally, there's nothing left for me as a human. I'm going to become a witch.
Is an interesting take, I will say.
Mm-hmm. Getting on a fucking plane and going on a world tour to give all the homies in our pod Discord server who have the word witch in front of them just a big hug.
Yeah, I mean, like, are you sure?
Just finding all your self-described witches and being like, you good, homie? Do you need a hug?
Are you getting anything from life?
We okay?
Well, now that I'm a witch, I'm living for the pod.
I see. Okay. Okay. Rowan, we can't ever stop this podcast.
Well, if I get bored, I'll just go to a different fragment. It's fine.
Okay.
It's fine.
the fragment is Final Fantasy. The fragment is Kingdom Hearts.
I bit up Kingdom Hearts in the future. I'm like, oh, hi, Goofy. Is that Courtney in the background?
They should have put Beatrice in Kingdom Hearts. That's all I'm saying.
Well, actually, you know, Kingdom Hearts is inspired by a certain hit visual.
Walt Disney read Umen Echo.
Walt Disney, when writing Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, it's like, damn. Got some points about the nature of truth, though.
I also you can tell that because there's seven dwarves, like just like the seven stakes, each of the dwarves representing one of the seven sins.
Uh-huh. It's all coming together.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, fuck happy.
The seven sins were actually inspired by UNESCO.
What?
We need to move on.
No, we're not saying this. We have so much left to go through, and we've been going on for a while, so let's just power through.
Yep. It was at this moment in the narrative where I realised, did Anja turn into chunks of meat in episode 4? Because that's how her corpse will look when she's fallen off a building.
Wasn't going to be the one to say it.
I don't like that. Mm-hmm. I worry.
Depends how big the building.
It was a skyscraper. It's pretty big. Yeah, I had that moment. I was like, ooh, oh god, that's horrible. That's dark, if so. Anyway, yeah.
Chunks time.
We then see that Burncastle has summoned a bunch of noble goats to finish off the game board. And that Erica's gonna go off and like command them.
I'm just like, why are they here? And it's like, oh, Featherine's having a party. These are the party guests. We're holding a party to commemorate the death of Beatrice's game cat box thing, because you know the truth is going to be revealed soon.
And as we see in the Golden Land, a bunch of like basically pirate ships have shown up containing all these noble goats.
There's a lot. The imagery of this is amazing.
Actually, the bit at the end of Lord of the Rings when they all ship off to the Grey Havens, this is a reference to this part of Umen Echo.
Oh, really? That's right. Yeah. Pirates of the Caribbean was based off this bit of Umen Echo.
Umen Echo. As was Peter Pan.
At this point, At this point, everyone on the island is holed up in the Golden Land. It's basically the only bit left of the game.
Yeah, there's like the doors, a tiny bit of floor and in front of it, and the Golden Land.
Yeah. And basically everyone left is trying to persuade Lambda Delta into helping out.
Yeah, because she can get into the party. Yeah. Featherine's having.
And she's trying to get her to bring Ange.
Yeah, they're like, bring Ange and she's not happy with that. Which, yeah. To be honest, like, I see her logic, because she's like, if I bring Anja, all that will do is that mean that I will trap both myself and Anja in the Golden Land here, where we will all get eaten by the goats. So, like, that won't save her, and I'll die too. And I'm like, yeah, okay, fair enough, Lambda, honestly. Like, that doesn't seem the most sensible thing to do.
So, the Bathless says he's going to go on the front lines and try and convince Lambda Delta that he's that this game board is worth saving. We will see how that pans out. Because now we cut back to Anja and... it seems like everything's almost ready for the great unveiling of the truth.
Yeah.
And in the human world, we get a very interesting scene where Professor Otsuki, that professor that Ange met with all the way back in episode 4, has shown up to a convention where Hachijo Toya is apparently showing off the diary.
Yeah, so in the human world, this party is essentially a conference where Hachijo is going to open the diary because she has the key, and they're going to read it out for all of the witch hunters and reveal the truth. Which goes back to, you know how I was saying last time that, like, none of the witch hunters would have believably left that book closed if they had the opportunity to open it. This just proves that, because the moment Hachijo's like, I've got the key, I'm going to open it, they're all like, fantastic, fuck yeah, let's go. And so apparently their problem before this was not that they didn't want to know the truth, it was that they didn't want to break the book. And I'm like, yeah, no one, they would not have given a shit about that anyway. But she's like, I'm going to unveil the secrets of Rokkenjima.
Yes, she's ready to unveil it. And she then... goes back, once she's like sort of said that she's going to unveil it, she actually just goes fucks off back to the witch world to give the book to Burncastle, who gives it to Anja.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Anja, there is an incredible line. I don't know if it's in the fucking book translation, but in the Let's Play translation, in that instant, two Anjas appeared inside of her, taking control of her body at the same time. And I was like, oh. There are two Anjas inside you.
Yeah, no, that was in the game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was a beautiful line.
Yes. We basically get some lore on the key that the whole only Anja can use the key thing will wear off when the key is used. So Burncastle will be able to use it. And I guess Hachijo Toya is banking on the fact that she'll be able to use this key. Yeah. So don't let everyone down, Anja.
Yeah, Anja also she has a moment. She kind of hesitates a bit when she's given the book, because she's like, I know those people in the Halloween party weren't my real family, but they were nice to me, and it was nice, and they didn't want me to do this. Should I really do this?
Yeah,
and then she does.
And she decides to do it.
Yeah. Which, you know, I could have predicted, I think.
the book sort of beams the truth into her.
And guess what? We don't fucking see it.
Yeah, we get some grey stills of some shots of basically generic island stuff. And then we get a sort of trippy scene. She's back in school, but there are these students with goat heads.
It's the goat girl, school girls and again.
Absolutely living for the goat school girl red eye combo panel. Just mwah. Playing all the hits. Now we need just the great big mouth animation.
Yeah, yeah.
These are my favorite parts of Umen Echo.
They start to bite her, and they start speaking in the red truth. They tell her that this is the truth, and refuses to accept.
They also say quite a lot of red truth that's literally censored out, so that we can't see it.
Yes, they say. Yeah.
And how angry I am about that will depend on how quickly we get the truth ourselves. I'm withholding my anger for now. Okay, Ryukishi?
What I will say is the lines, so we get the red truth that's censored. 1, 2, 3. There's 5 words. 3 words of they're 3 words of, I believe, the exact same length.
We're not doing this again.
Long word, and then a word that is slightly shorter. And I have no fucking idea what that's supposed to represent. Let me just give me briefly.
You can plug some stuff in there.
I'm gonna find out how many letters the really.
Well, they could have stretched out some syllables, because literally 2 lines later they put 13 E's in the word red.
Oh, you're right.
That sucks.
Okay, so it's 26 characters long, whatever that is.
They could also be laughing, because as we know, you can laugh in red.
It spells Rowan is incompetent twice. That's what I've decided.
Yeah, it's just felt really weird. Yeah. 9 characters.
It says Ounson for the last time.
Ounce and for the last. I don't think so. Rowan is incompetent. Incompetent. That's what it says.
Nice. We fixed it.
We cracked it.
We did it. It's just like
and
the
Ange
editor.
Is speaking out because Ange is like, no, Rowan's my favorite co-host.
They did that bit at the start where they were really mean to me and I loved it.
So Ange has a full breakdown where she's like, actually, who cares about the truth? It fucking sucks.
Yeah, okay. She says, the red truth is absolute. Who is it absolute for? It's absolute for you guys, right? Not for me. I won't let you contaminate my truth with yours. And I'm like, that's the fucking themes there.
That's them themes.
That'll be the fucking themes of the book that you've just been
ignoring. One of the themes
Anja.
Of the book as well, which we haven't mentioned yet, is multiple times in this reading, different characters have said the words, you can't unlearn the truth. I'm just like, oh.
Ryukishi offering the answers to Umen Echo, but Discord spoilering them so you can decide whether or not you want to know.
But I didn't expect Anja to like the truth. The fact that despite being shown two different fragments in which her parents or her parents and her brother killed multiple people. And obviously hating it, but on some level, being told they were the truth and not outright being like, you're a complete liar. The fact that she really vehemently denies this is true makes me wonder what the fuck is in this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, the question is,
well, we know it's probably not that Ava did it from her reaction.
It sounds like because she wanted it to be that Ava did it, and she says I want it to be her. So yeah, apparently not Ava. Boo.
Yeah.
But what? I'm struggling to work out what big revelation there could be here that would have caused that reaction in this time.
So Anja's breakdown is that she's going to write using the red truth only she can write.
Yeah.
And she jumps off the building.
Yeah. And that's sad. Kind of set up as inevitable throughout this reading, but sad nevertheless. That it went exactly as predicted. And yeah, she jumps. You get a weird
splash art again.
You get a kind of interesting double thing where, you see her jumping off the building in the human world, but you also there's a version of this in where she jumps off one of the big towers of books in the witch world as well, because then like Burncastle's cats are the, like, clean her body off the floor in the witch world, and Burn's like, oh well, and goes to give the book back to Featherine. It's also stated here that Anja's soul will apparently just kind of exist forever in a state of suffering without ever being able to remember why, and that's because she threw away the chance of, like, living with her family forever because she betrayed them by trying to learn the truth. And I'm like, fucking hell. That's a bit much,
probably
isn't it?
Should have told her that before she opened
the
book. I
know, that would have been good. Like, if the choice was you live an afterlife of dark and suffering, or you live an afterlife with the family who died but you didn't learn the truth, I think your choice
might
be different.
Well, I think it's more...
But...
It's more that, like, she's been given this unrefutable statement that she can't be with her family, so she can't go to them because she's thrown that away.
Yeah.
She threw away the Halloween party where they were all together because she didn't want that. So,
but yeah, whew.
I think that's what that means. Yeah, she is basically in a eternal, like, torture purgatory. And she's even tried to write her red truth with her own blood, but was unable to.
Yeah, it says something like she tried to write something like on the floor, but then like her own blood covered it up or something. And I was like, fuck, Jesus Christ, this is a bit heavy. I don't know where the rest of this game board goes now either, because Meta and Real World Anja are now dead. Does the rest of this game board become Battler's Revenge? Are they able to resurrect Anja somehow? Like, where are we going with this?
We don't have that much left, do we?
Not tons.
No, we don't.
But, like, more than a little bit, you know? Jesus, we are close to the end.
On the Let's Play, there's three different, like, names of things, and then the Let's Play, the tea parties.
Wow.
Well, we only have three more episodes of the pod, so.
Wow.
And one of those is, like, just wrap up. So we really are, like, kind of barreling towards the end here.
I'm about to become not just a motherfucker who is reading Umineko, but a motherfucker who has read Umineko.
Yeah. I know, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Kind of weird.
Hey, so anything for the fans. Gotta love the fans.
We love the fans.
Yep.
We did not cover the final bit. There's a very, very final bit where basically, like, the chapter ends with, like, unknown narrator lying in the road in the rain, and a car, like, drives up to them with the headlights on, which is a very, it's where I wrote down, what a weird ending. Because, yeah, I kind of expected it to kind of end after the Anja bit, and I don't know who this person is, and so many more questions. And this is supposed to be the answer arc.
So, next week, we will be reading chapter 14, Hachijo Ikkyuko, and chapter 15, Siege of the Fleet.
Siege of the Fleet. It's pirate time, Umineko edition.
I hope you guys have enjoyed us kind of getting scarily close to the end. I'm having a bit of a moment where I'm like, damn, this has been such a present element of my life, and it's like ending.
And then,
if you're listening to this live, have we said on pod what we think our next thing we're going to do is?
I don't remember.
We've alluded to it several times.
Okay. If you're listening to this live, Hatterful Boyfriend is on sale on the Steam
summer
sale. You should probably go and get that if you,
like,
don't own it already.
It's cheap
is what I'm
normally
saying.
But it's very cheap. It's £1.74, I think, right now.
Yeah, it's extremely cheap.
Yeah, we will we'll be delving into the world of pigeons after this.
Yeah, but, like,
we need a fucking break.
We need a break,
after
and
this
also
shit.
That is much shorter than this, so, you know, a palate cleanser, you might say.
Yeah, before we dive into something else
that is enormous. Insane. Also, we've got like two more episodes of Umen Echo to decide whether I feel like reading this book was worth it.
What are your current feelings? Which way does the dial swing right now?
Well, at the end of episode 7, I was gone. I was out the door. I was like, this is a piece of shit. This has upset me. Hmm. Episode 8 has actually like brought me back in quite a significant way with the interactive stuff, the mystery things, like a lot of like the single truth of Andra's stuff is interesting. The manga helped as well, definitely. And so, like, this is why I mean, like, the ending of this will, like, make it or break it for me. Because if I really like the ending of episode 8, I think I'll be like, yeah, okay, like, don't read this if you want a really satisfying, like, murder mystery. But it's still a good piece of media that is really interesting and does some interesting stuff. If it ends in a way I don't like, I might just put it in the bin. But like,
well, that's really interesting. I feel like that's the point, right? Is like, if you walk away from this satisfied, it was worth the time you spent dedicating to it. If you walk away from this frustrated or dissatisfied, then of course it wasn't worth it.
But yeah, we'll see. I'm intrigued because, like, I think one of the things that made me so annoyed at the end of episode 7 was I was like, I've been told that these are the answers to the previous game boards. So, like, this feels like the end of the game. And there's still, like, because what I wanted from the end of the game was the answers and a cool solution and stuff. So I didn't really know what episode 8 could add that would make it better. And so far it's added quite a lot. And I really hope that it continues that thread, that upswing.
Yeah, I feel like we've left behind the Sayo stuff so much that I'm like, the truth that Anja has just learned probably involves quite a lot of Sayo content that we're just
presumably unless it doesn't, in which case that would be wild. Like,
Umen Echo does do a thing, I think, where it sort of has a bit it's doing, and the bit is like, this is the Beatrice section, or this is the Erica Ferrudo section, or this is the Sayo section, and it kind of just sort of like leaves that behind really easily, and it'll just move on to whatever the next like thing it's doing is. And so it wouldn't surprise me if the ending that Anja gets is like, there's very little Sayo in it whatsoever.
Okay, hear me out.
Because
hear me out.
Umeneka's not interested in that anymore.
The single truth.
Go ahead.
The single truth that Andra has seen is they're like, right, okay, witches, not real. Aliens, however, completely real, killed your whole family.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
Yeah, that's my theory, is that it was actually aliens. And I'm just like, I can't take this. I can't take this anymore.
And just like, I can't now go around telling people this because the red truth doesn't exist in our world. And as a consequence, everyone's just going to think I'm mad. Yes.
And everyone at school is bullying me by telling me that it's aliens. And I'm like, it is. Why won't anyone believe me? On that note, I think this is a good place to wrap up. All our social media is in the description. Please follow us.
Follow Courtney on Twitch.
Oh yeah, I should get back to Twitch streaming. Whoops. Now my internet is fixed. Oh yeah, sorry about the delay on the last episode. My internet exploded.
Last time we tried to record the podcast, it literally broke Courtney's internet for a full week. With the power of
really
our thoughts.
Did.
The high intellectualism that goes on in this pod.
I know.
Also, my partner is fucking streaming. I would be
I'll link that again as well. I linked that last time.
Promo him. He's doing Street Fighter on Tuesday evenings and Path of Exile on Thursday evenings.
Nice.
So there's something for both types of trans people. There's something for both types of trans people. Are you a numbies trans people or a fighting game trans people? Well, we've got
That's
it all.
So funny.
Well,
yes.
On that note, thank you and good night.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.